Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, is...
Sesame Walsh Encarta.
Walsh?
Yeah.
Why Walsh?
Because I was just talking about Matt Walsh's Twitter being hacked.
Oh, okay. Are you admitting to doing it?
No, I don't know how to hack at all.
Okay, just making sure.
I have no clue how people hack into things. It just seems like it's a totally different language to me.
I thought maybe, you know, you just... Maybe you sent letters and then they somehow got, you know, transcribed into tweets.
Maybe, I don't know.
That's the only way I would know how to do it. I also tried to, like... rearrange a bird that I found on the side of the road.
Oh, really?
And thought that maybe that would tweet for me, but it didn't work.
Well, it didn't work.
And then I just got sick and almost died, you know.
Yeah, it happens.
I got bird flu.
Bird flu is not a joke. Not good.
Nope. It's kind of funny, though, because birds fly and then you can get bird flu.
Yeah, I get it.
That's the past tense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
So anyways, today on the show, Mr. Walsh.
Oh, don't call me Mr. Walsh, no. Middle name.
All right, Sesame. Today on the show, we are covering a movie that you picked for us to cover.
Yes.
It is the 2002 American science fiction action comedy film entitled Clock Stoppers. It was written by Rob Hedden, J. David Stem, and David N. Weiss, and directed by number one on Star Trek The Next Generation, Jonathan Frakes, a.k.a. Will Riker. Yeah.
Nice.
Yes. He's a prolific film and TV director, so.
I can see why. This movie was pretty heavy on the sci-fi stuff. It also had our boy, French Stewart, which we reviewed Inspector Gadget 2 a few years ago.
Yes.
He was in, yes.
Yeah, Jonathan Frakes, as a director, he directed Star Trek First Contact, Star Trek Insurrection. He's directed episodes of Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Discovery, Strange New Worlds, and Picard. And Picard he just starred in the last season of, too. As well as TV shows like The Librarian, Roswell, Leverage, and Burn Notice.
Wow.
Among other things. He's a pretty prolific TV director, especially.
But, yeah, I used to watch Leverage. I watched a few episodes of Roswell, but I couldn't really get into it. But
Leverage is great, and also I highly recommend Leverage Redemption on Freevee.
Freevee, that's a good app.
Freevee app, yeah, it's on there for free.
So there's lots of good stuff on it.
They have two seasons of it. It's a freebie original, the Leverage Redemption.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's lots of good stuff on freebie. Like,
oh, yeah.
Go through it. So Roku app's pretty good, too. They had all seasons of, I don't know if it still does, but it did when I was watching it, Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh, yeah.
You have to watch ads, but, you know.
Yeah, but it's cool. I mean, a lot of these free streaming services, like ad-supported ones, are pretty good, you know, like Pluto and Tubi and stuff like that, too. It's kind of cool where you can see movies or TV shows that you can't find elsewhere, too. This movie, however, we found on YouTube for free.
Yeah, it was for free on YouTube.
For free with ads. Yeah.
Well,
I couldn't find it. I was surprised. It's a Paramount movie, and it wasn't streaming on Paramount Plus. But yeah, not everything is always streaming on there. So,
yeah. Yeah, I was kind of surprised, too. And it said the 90th anniversary, which was in 2002.
Yeah.
So now it's the 111th anniversary. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow. I feel old.
Me too. That movie came out in 2002. I was in my senior year of high school, halfway through it, because 2002 was, you know, started in January. So I started my senior year in 2001 and then graduated in 2002. But man, this movie is definitely a time capsule, no pun intended. Like, it's very much a product of time. Like,
oh, totally.
You know, this movie came out in early 2000.
When half the soundtrack is Blink-182 songs.
Yeah, Blink-182. They also played a Nickelback, but wasn't even a well-known Nickelback song.
And then there was some random, like, Smash Mouth song I had never heard either, too.
Yeah, so. I think it's maybe because they wanted to spend less money, so they took they saved up all their money for all the small things. But, like, there's, like, so many, like, tricks that remind me of Spy High. Like, that's the other thing of, like, the early 2000s is, like, people doing bike tricks. Like, late 90s, early 2000s, like, every movie about, like, teenagers had to have at least one cool bike trick. It was, like...
Or skating trick or something, like a skateboard or something. Yeah. It's, like, part of that, like, X Games sort of thing, like, all of a sudden, Tony Hawk and all those people were cool then, and
oh yeah, they were super famous back then.
I mean, not saying he's not now, but you know,
well, no, that was like the it factor back then. Like, now he looks like he's like his age, like, you know. But man, like the lighting, the acting, the clothes. I mean, if you didn't know when this movie came out, you would just guess like obviously 2002, 2003. Like,
yeah.
If you know your cinema, at least, which I would say this is,
or if you were alive then, you know.
So. Well, yeah, if you're alive and we're watching movies at that time, which I was. I did not watch this when it came out, though.
No, I've never seen it before. Until you suggested it. So, what's your initial reaction to the movie after watching it?
It was okay. It wasn't. I don't think it was great, but it was. Yeah, it was fine. It was. You know, I had a. You know, and it was, you know, it was like a fun, you know, happy kind of like a, you know, happy ending. Like, it wasn't too, like the stakes weren't too high. I don't know. It was just like a fun movie that you didn't really have to think too much, even if it did, you know, relate to like time travel or at least super speed or whatever.
Yeah.
It was time stopping, basically. Was what it was. It wasn't that they were time traveling. It was that they were going so fast.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Flash almost. Because at one point, it starts phasing out, like just like how the Flash does.
I know.
Like, I was like, wait a minute.
That's funny.
I
liked it a lot better than I thought I would. It was definitely, you know, of its time. We have in the cast here, we've got Jesse Bradford starring as Zach Gibbs. And Jesse is known for a lot of things. He's still acting today. He was in a movie recently that I really want to cover for the podcast sometime. that I haven't seen yet, but it was called Mary Kiss Cam.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it actually looked like it might be good, but it could be cheesy as hell, too. So it's like, it could be in our wheelhouse.
I've heard the title, but I don't know what it's about.
Yeah,
but
it's about these people that go on a date and they get on the kiss cam on the, you know, on the Jumbotron at this hockey game. And then I guess the team starts winning every time they kiss at a game.
Okay.
Yeah. And it takes place around Christmas, I guess, at some point. So that's why the Mary in it. He's known for, you know, like, motion pictures, including Romeo and Juliet, Bring It On, Swim Fan, lots of different things. So yeah, he's been around a while.
Yeah, he's been around.
Yeah, and then we got Paula Garces as Francesca, and she was 27 when she was in this movie, playing a 17-year-old.
She looked familiar. Is she in anything else?
One of the major things that I know her from is she's the girl that Harold is attracted to in Harold and Kumar.
Oh, okay.
If you've seen those series, like, she lives in the building with him. I remember that. But she's been on a lot of TV shows and stuff too. So
okay.
Yeah, she's Colombian. So.
Yeah, in the movie, I think she was Venezuelan or something.
Yeah.
Who plays the dad? He looks familiar, too. The scientist. Her science teacher.
His name is Robin Thomas. He's been in a lot of things. He's been acting since 1986, so it's like, I wouldn't know where you know him from, but, you know, for me to just mention anything, it would take forever because he's got so many credits, you know?
That's fine.
Yeah.
The mom, she looked familiar, too.
That was Julia Sweeney. She was on Saturday Night Live for years. And she was in the movie It's Pat, where she played the...
I saw that. That's an interesting movie.
We got our friend French Stewart, as we mentioned, as Earl Doppler. The young Earl Doppler, but the voice is provided by somebody else, by French Stewart, that we see at the end, is Miko Hughes, who people may know from Pet Sematary, Kindergarten Cop, Full House, Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Oh my God.
Yeah. There's a fan film coming out with a sequel to Wes Craven's New Nightmare, and he's actually starring, he's actually starring in it, which would be cool. Anyways, then we got Michael Biehn as Henry Gates in this. He is best known as Kyle Reese in The Terminator. He was also in The Abyss and Aliens, Tombstone, The Rock, Hill Street Blues, Magnificent Seven TV series. A lot of things. So, yeah.
You also got our boy Kelso from Scrubs playing the... Well, not Kelso, but the actor plays Kelso.
Yeah, we do have him. Ken Jenkins. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Also, an episode of Star Trek, too. One of the early episodes of Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
So.
I think everybody's been on Star Trek.
True.
Except for me.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe you get on there someday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're listening out there, Paramount.
You'll direct, like, a new... And just give me a series of Star Trek, you know.
Yeah, they do have some new series that's coming out, so yeah, maybe I could. Yeah. So anyways, what goes down in this movie here?
This kid's dad, he's a science professor at a college, and he's, like, supposed to be, like, he's really brilliant. And his friend, played by French Stewart, sends him a watch that basically allows people to stop time. To basically kind of work on it or give him ideas and things like that. French Stewart's character is trying to get away from the country, but he's caught by these government people to force him to work on the project to make the product better. But they're forcing him to do it hyperspeed, and it's like rapidly aging him. You know, like he's only been there for 3 weeks. But he's aged like 20 years because of just how fast he's working. And, you know, you kind of have like a father-son type of conflict story where, you know, the son's really not interested in science and things like that. He wants his dad to take him to a car lot to co-sign on the car that he saved up money for, but the dad's always, you know, busy with work and whatnot.
Yeah, he saved his money by selling crap on eBay.
Yeah, he would just buy, like, cheap shit, and then he would just sell it off, you know, on eBay or whatever.
Yeah.
Apparently, I guess he sold enough to make a down payment on a pretty nice-looking car, so... And, you know, so he's, you know, his dad's got to go to some conference. He doesn't take him to the car lot like he promised he would. We didn't promise he would.
Yeah.
He would say, like, oh, read these, you know, safety reports, you know, on the car or whatever, and then... He read them, and then his dad's like, oh, well, now you got to compare him, like, basically just, you know, making him do more, you know, homework, whatever. He never really ended on actually taking him to the car lot. It's kind of a shitty move, but whatever. And so his son, I forgot his name, he ends up finding this watch.
Yeah, the main character's name is Zach.
Yeah, Zach is, you know, well, I'm kind of skipping over, but he ends up buying this watch. He just thinks it's a cool watch, so he puts it on. But before that, we have the whole thing where his best friend works at some like skateboard shop or something, or some kind of, you know, like extreme sports, you know, type of store or whatever. And, you know, of course he's playing the over animated black guy character, you know, which is pretty common during that era, you know? And, but he's a junior assistant though. So he's moving up in that store. So, you know,
yes.
He can be managed. And he can really run that place, you know.
Yeah, in like 50 years.
But, you know, no, we also have the early 2000s quasi-sexual harassment played off as a joke kind of thing where they meet, where they see Francesca for the first time. And what's his name? For the main guy? I forgot his name again. He
Zach.
Told me. Zach, sorry.
Yeah.
Zach with a K.
Yes.
And, not a Z, not a C-H, K. And,
yes.
And he says something like along the lines like, oh, well, she's new in the country, and she's probably lonely and vulnerable. It's like, oh, my God. it's like pulling a Dennis Reynolds there. Like,
yes, it's...
Yeah, let's look. Let's get in her good graces by, like, you know, exploiting her perceived vulnerability.
Yeah, it's
but
like...
But she doesn't fall for it. She, you know, she shoots him down.
At least they made her a... strong-willed woman to
she shoots him down and then but he ends up somehow wooing her to let him have a second chance or whatever. And so that's what happens when he's got the watch, and she basically invites him over to rake leaves with her, you know. So basically doing chores, and you know, he ends up finding like the easier way to do it by using like the riding lawnmower or whatever. And then she goes in to make some tea or something, and then he ends up hitting a watch, and then it's like everything stops, and, you know, he thinks he's frozen time, but really what's happening is he's just moving super fast, and he ends up finding a possum, which has been, like, the thing that's been getting into stuff, like food or trash or whatnot.
Yeah, knocking it over.
He tries to take the possum into the house to show her, you know, what happened, but then the time thing goes back to normal, and so there's now a possum just running wild in the house, and she thinks that, you know, he did it on purpose for whatever reason, so she kicks him out of the house, but
well,
then...
I think what it is it's just a miscommunication of their cultures. She does not understand that in America, the way you show somebody you love them is give them a possum.
Give them a live possum, exactly. And then you let it run the house... And then you catch, it's called catching the possum.
Yeah, catching the possum. We all do that, don't we?
It's called catching the possum, yes.
That's how my parents met.
Yeah, you let it loose in the house or whatever, you know, cloister you happen to be in at the time. And you try to catch it, and then once you catch it, you put a crown on it, and then you let it loose, and then that means that you're going to marry the person. So,
if the possum comes back, that means you got to end the relationship.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, But no, so she's about to kick him out of the house, and then she ends up touching his shoulder at this time, but then the watch did its thing again, so both of them now were, like, you know, frozen in time or whatever. So, you know, they thought that was really cool. And, you know, that's pretty much all that happens, I mean, for that scene. And then you want to talk about the DJ scene? That was kind of funny.
Yeah, there was a DJ battle. Zach's best friend is named Meeker.
Yeah.
He's your token African-American character.
Yep.
In the movie.
I think it was just him. No, there was a couple more.
There was a bad guy.
Of course, bad guy. I think it was a government worker, too. I think there was three.
Yeah, there was Jason George, who's a well-known actor. He played Richard, an agent who works for Michael Biehn's character. Yeah, so at the QT Corporation. Yeah. So we got this situation there. They go to spin-off, or what was it? Something like that? I don't know.
It was just some, like, DJ.
Yeah, but I think it was called, like, a spin-off or something like that. Yeah.
But it was stupid, because it wasn't even, like what DJs normally do. They were just literally just spinning the records.
They were just scratching, and it was was no finesse or mixing of songs or anything to it. And there's like this
scratch.
There's this like short kid from the school who was like, you know, at one point earlier in the movie sprayed, you know, product placement all over the one kid. And
product placement. What was it? I didn't see the bottle or the can.
It was Mountain Dew.
It was Mountain Dew, of course.
Yeah, and the next scene, Francesca did it back to those guys. And she had a bottle of Pepsi. So it was like,
God.
Then at the DJ thing, there's a big Pepsi banner in the background of I notice these things. I can't help it. So it's
It's that thing that Mountain Dew Pepsi would do all the time.
Yeah.
Like the cool. But yeah, it's just this dumb DJ scratching challenge. Yeah.
And so then they help Meeker look cool by turning the watch on and then making him dance or something. Which,
yeah, because they're bombing terribly.
Yeah, because, but my thing is like, this wasn't like Bring It On. I mean, not Bring It On. You Got Served or whatever. It was a DJ contest. This wasn't
that's all it was.
You know, it just made no sense to me. This was about the music, not about the dancing.
It was 2002, so that's probably why they had it.
Yeah.
At that point, everybody thought they could be a DJ, and all they had to do was just it. I'm like, no, DJs actually do, like, real music. Like, they don't just scratch, but...
Yeah,
at that time, like, nu metal was really popular, where it's like every band just seemed to have a DJ where all they did was just scratch records at, like, random parts of the song.
Yeah, even then, the scratching was accompanied by music.
Yeah, no, exactly. It was part of the music.
It wasn't just the scratching. I mean, like Grandmaster Flash, when he invented, like, you know, DJing like this, he would take one song, mix it with another, take a little bit of a, you know, section of this song, and then scratch a little bit, and then go into the other song, and then layer them on top of each other, and did a different thing. You know, it's not like...
That's what real DJs do, yeah. They don't just scratch, you know? Yeah.
Or then there's the other real DJs like I am, and you just play a playlist at a wedding and...
it still takes, because you find the right playlist. And
and then I talk to the crowd and...
Right. You know, random little tangent.
Pump them up,
you pump them up, you know when to do the songs, when to do the fast songs. You're not like Barney from How I Met Your Mother, where you just rise and rise. You know, you don't have any... playlist.
Gotta have a slowdown.
No, he doesn't believe in slowdown. It's rise and rise, not rise and fall. And he tells that to fake Moby in that one episode. But I'm like, it's just lots of meta. I don't think anyone else knows what I'm talking about. But just like a very quick tangent, though, like those old DJs from like the 70s and early 80s, like they had to be like insanely good when it came to perfect rhythm, because they had to play the record at exactly the right moment, otherwise the beat would just like eventually go off and not make any sense. Like nowadays they have equipment where you can basically time it correctly so that it doesn't go off. But back then, they didn't have that.
Nice.
You literally just had to play the record at the exact right timing. Can you imagine how insane you have to be? Like, not insane, but just like how good you have to be to know a rhythm to just time it exactly right. Because if you don't, it's just going to veer off eventually, and it's just going to sound like really stupid.
And to let anybody know that's getting that's at home wanting to get into this, you know, you have to use a special kind of turntable.
Yes, you can't just scratch a record.
Yeah, because what you'll do
is... I learned that the hard way with my brother. Well, we tried to scratch like a Ninja Turtles record, and we completely ruined it.
Yeah, no. My thing is I didn't ruin the record when I did it. I burnt out the motor in my turntable.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I was recording myself scratching, I think it was like a Doors record or something, and then I,
Yeah. Apparently, some people have a thing where you don't even need to flip the record. It just plays the second. I don't know how that works, but I don't know if they have like a needle on the bottom that goes or something like that.
I watched
some videos where they play like a Metallica record, and like a Metallica record is like 78 minutes long. That does not fit on one record.
Mm-hmm.
And then like when it went to side two, it just, it was live, like, you know, it was still spinning. So it wasn't like he cut the camera and went back. It just played the second side. So I don't know if they have two-sided turntables or records or I don't know what, but it was
some of them will flip the disc.
This didn't even flip it, though. Huh. This didn't even do that. It just played.
It might be. I don't know.
Anyway, that's the whole side tangent.
So anyways, back to the movie. So they have this thing. Meeker ends up looking cool. So we got that. Then we, after the date ends, Zach gets a kiss from Francesca.
Yeah.
So then, Gates, Michael Biehn's character ends up sending his henchmen and women out for, to find the watch because he finds out that Zach's dad has the watch.
Yeah.
Zach's dad is, however, out of town at some convention or something.
Yeah.
So they have these, solid nitrogen guns. So basically what'll happen with that is like it puts people back into normal time if you shoot them with the solid nitrogen guns.
Yeah.
So, they go to, George's house, I mean, Zach and George is the dad, to recover the prototype watch that they have. While fleeing them, because Zach discovers them in the house, he ends up discovering that Doppler is outside, tied up in their van. He frees him, and then a chase ensues in the van. Around town, Zach ends up crashing into a river.
Of course.
Then he's passed out, and Doppler's trying to tell him that he shouldn't get the watch wet. You know,
and of course he does.
Just like Gremlins, you don't get them wet.
You don't get the... Also, too, Zach is a complete fucking moron, because he stops right at a black van with tinted windows that would not be parked in that neighborhood whatsoever. That's what he thinks is going to save him. Like, you idiot, but whatever. It's like, okay, dude.
But if he didn't, we wouldn't have a plot.
No, we wouldn't, but I'm just saying, like, that's the dumbest place ever to think you're going to be protected.
Yeah.
Black van with tinted windows. Like, come on. And,
he did say free puppy on the side of the van, so he went in to
candy or Xbox or PlayStation. And, play, what was that guy Eddie Burback said about the what was it called? The free smart? There we go. where he's like, you want to play, was it Ice Age 2 or something like that? The video game.
So what happens? What happens next after this, though?
Okay, so he's in the hospital, and, you know, he's telling his tale about the watch, and everyone thinks he's got, like, a brain injury or whatever, but then when his mom is talking to George about the what he says, something about the molecule accelerator or something like that. His dad knows that he has to watch. And then, you know, he wants them to come there right away. But then, of course, government people show up at the hotel. And then they kidnap him to do the work that French Stewart was doing. And then so there's this whole thing. They need to break his dad out of his, you know, work prison or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the friendship between Meeker is still there, where Meeker helps him out. And also Francesca is there. And then they help. And at first, French Stewart's going to, you know, ditch him because he's too scared, because he doesn't want to be back in that, you know, super hyper speed or whatever. But then he eventually, you know, becomes brave and he freezes one of the dudes that was trying to, you know, get the watch back or whatever. I'm pretty sure I'm skipping over a bunch of things.
That's okay. Just
watched it. But that's kind of the gist of it, really. It's, you know, it's a fun movie. I think it was made by Nickelodeon, so it was kind of meant for kids.
Yeah, it was a Nickelodeon produced film.
You know, so, you know, but I thought it was, you know, pretty decent. Like, you know, the stakes were high. It wasn't overly dramatic. It wasn't, and also it wasn't like overly goofy funny either. That was kind of a selling point for me. It wasn't like too stupid, you know, so.
Yeah, and it,
I would recommend it. So,
and I mean, it does end. There is a creepy moment at the end.
Oh, really?
Doppler uses the machine to reverse is the aging effects that he had in the hypertime thing.
Yes.
And inadvertently turns him back into Miko Hughes as a teenager, you know, that's instead of French Stewart. And Zach's little sister, who's, you know, a teenager as well, sees him in the back seat and calls him like a hottie or something. And that's just creepy to me.
Well, she didn't know he's really...
No, I know, but it was just creepy to me that they wrote that in there.
I know, but Zach was like, no, like...
Yeah, I know.
He knows who Doppler... I don't think he told them, because Doppler was trying to escape country because everyone knows who he is, so he tried to hide himself by being...
I'm not creeped out by the characters' reactions or anything that they did.
I know.
It's the writing.
It's the right. All of these movies, not all of them, but a lot of these movies in the early 2000s had these weird, creepy moments that now we would all cringe at. But it was like, for example, like in the Sleepover movie, like the, what was her name, Yancy or something like that.
Yeah.
He was like talking to this guy who was like doing like, you know, the DJ stuff at like the bar or whatever.
Yeah. Who had easily like 25 years old or something. Yeah.
Or you had to at least be 18, I think, to do that because they serve alcohol and stuff like that. So as earliest, he's probably around 18.
And she was like, what, in like middle school or junior high or something?
Well, no, because they were ending junior high in the summer. Then they were going into high school, you know, later on. That's when it was, so like, again, like, they just wrote this stuff in here and then it was just like, I mean, I bet you if you talk to the insane QAnon people, they'd probably say they did it on purpose to like get people used to the idea.
Yeah, it was predictive programming. That's what it was.
Exactly. Yeah, that's like a good conspiracy. I love the predicting. Predictive programming.
Yes.
That's one of the big ones. But I think they just weren't thinking. That's what I really think it was. They thought it would be like a funny little thing to put in the movie. And they did. And it was like, oh, okay. And, you get the same thing sometimes where it's usually the male high school students like really obsessed with one of the hot teachers. It just gets really weird where it's like,
back in the 60s, the Beatles had the song, She Was Just 17. You know what I mean?
Really?
But I was in my 20s.
I know Winger has a song like that. I didn't know the Beatles did.
Oh, the Beatles did. Yeah. I was like,
the rock band Winger.
Sorry, standing there was the song or whatever, but the line is she was just 17, and then even Ringo after the Beatles broke up had some song where it was something about 16 perfect and she's 9 or something like that. I can't remember the lyrics.
I tell you what, that shit was seen as normal back. Well,
yeah, that's what I'm
saying.
But
at least like they're not gonna do anything about it.
Yeah,
they are too. Because one of my Facebook friends posted something about Ted Nugent earlier today. And that he literally wrote a song called Jailbait, and it was about a 13-year-old girl. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like,
Didn't he like adopt? I mean, I know Steven Tyler did, but I think he might have too, like adopted some underage girl.
No, she was probably, I think she was 16 or 17 at the time.
Yeah.
I think she's from Hawaii and he married her. And I actually wrote about that to the guy because I remember watching Behind the Music when that came out. And every time she popped up, I thought it was his daughter talking. And then she mentioned about them being married. And I was like, wait, he married his daughter? And then like it finally clicked to me like, oh, no. Because like she looked like she was like 40 years old at the time. But then the marriage took place in like 1975. I'm like, how could she be 40 years old when she got married in 19? And like, it finally clicked. I'm like, oh, she married him when she was like 16. And he was like 29 or 28.
Yeah,
whatever.
Like
I don't know how old.
John Wayne was having an affair with an underage girl in Mexico when he was
saying, like,
married and stuff too.
Shit,
so it's like weird. So,
yeah. This shit was rampant back then. Like we don't realize until we like look through the history. But like, the same thing, the piano player, the Great Balls of Fire dude, what's his name?
Jerry Lee Lewis, yeah.
Married, like, his 14-year-old cousin, I think.
Yeah.
Or the elk. It's hard to keep up. There's so many.
I know. Yeah, but it was him. He married his, you know, he married his 14-year-old cousin. And then, like, Elvis was dating Priscilla when she was, underage, too. He started writing to her when she was, like, 13 or 14 or something. So, yeah. Yeah, it's all creepy. But
yeah, Jimmy Page, with Jimmy, I know now I'm on it, but Jimmy Page literally would lock a 14-year-old groupie in his hotel room whenever he played concerts and wouldn't even let her watch the concerts because he was afraid that she would talk to other guys, which is still gross because around his age, in his estimation, or worse, talking to someone her own age and taking a liking to. That would just be horrible, right? A 14-year-old girl talking to a 14-year-old boy, that would just be horrible, right? She should be talking to, like, a 29-year-old guy. But his mind, when he was all fucked up on Satanism and occultism and drugs, I guess that made sense in his mind. Who knows? But yeah, anyway, side tangent, I know. But just, like, when you actually look into the history of this stuff, it's like almost every rock star was doing this.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, it would actually be...
I mean, and don't get me started on R. Kelly, you know, recently, recent. So, yeah, in history.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That would actually be abnormal during that time if you weren't doing that. You would actually be seen as the anomaly.
Yeah.
Just fucked up. But, yeah, like, I remember that scene at the end where, like, I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that just kind of creeped me out. But anyways, I actually enjoyed the movie for the most part.
No,
it was
a good movie. I would recommend it.
Yeah, definitely of its time. Do you want to hear a little bit of trivia about the movie?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so the plot was inspired by the H.G. Wells 1901 story, The New Accelerator, about a scientist who develops a drug enabling him to move so fast that no one can see him. From his viewpoint, everyone else seems frozen in time. This was the first feature film directed by Jonathan Frakes, which was not part of the Star Trek franchise. I said this before. Paula Garces was 27 when she played the 17-year-old Francesca.
Okay.
The house that Francesca lives in is the same house that is used as the school in Halloween H2O and the mansion in Scream 3.
Wow.
So, let me see if there's anything else. At one point, Francesca says, "Beam me up, Scotty," and another time she says, "Make it so, number one."
Both added to
the script because of Jonathan Frakes. He always puts Star Trek references in everything he does. So,
cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. And he also had a cameo. He's in the background as a janitor behind Zach and Francesca and Doppler as they look for parts in the science symposium. So... yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. So
cool.
That's all we got here for trivia.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts here on this? This before we run out of time. See what I
no,
did there?
Not really. I mean, I would just recommend it. It's a fun movie. You know, it's not too silly. You know, it's got our boy Frank Stewart in it. You know. You know,
speaking of Third Rock from the Sun. Yeah.
Yeah, Third Rock from the Sun. Probably watch it with the family, like a family movie.
Yeah.
you know, it was probably rated PG at the time. Yep.
It's about all I can say, too. I liked it. It was good, you know. Anyways, folks, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to check out all2real2.com for any info about our show. Check out our T Public and our Patreon if you want to help out the show. That's if you want to. You don't have to. I'm not telling you to do anything.
Nope.
Again, anyways, I am telling you to be a good person, though.
Yeah.
Make sure you do that. That's the most important thing that you can do to help us out. Be a good person.
Yeah.
Share the show if you want. Again, if you want. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast or wherever else you can if you want. And
like Dennis Reynolds, we're 5-star men.
Yes, we are. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like a 4.5.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels down. Yeah.
Yeah. But then other times I feel like an 11. But
there you go.
Anyways, folks, I hope you have a good day, night, morning, afternoon, middle of the night, whatever it is when you're listening to this. And recycle, reduce, reuse. And remember, be good to each other, as I said.
Yep.
And remember that I love you. Sesame loves you.
True.
And until next time, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.